Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Stop being stupid, people.
All bets are off.
You all suck.
I'm Morenci Unfiltered.
Scumbags!
Get on the grid. Sports grid. I'm Morenci. Morenci Unfiltered. The games now. The podcast. Let's do this thing. We don't have a UFC card this week. We almost took it for granted that you would expect there's going to be a UFC card every couple of days. But, man, what a run. It was 3 UFC cards in a span of 7 days. They're taking a week off. They're going to be back UFC Fight Night on May 30th. So a couple of Saturdays from now. They're hoping to hold the event in Las Vegas at their entertainment and performance center. You know, they built the Octagon, their Apex Theater, and all that type of stuff. And if they can't get approved by the Nevada State Athletic Commission, who has not approved it yet, they say they're going to be going to Arizona in Lou's backyard, as Arizona is becoming the West Coast version of Florida right now. Lou steps up. Hey, what's going on, Lou?
Not too much, Gabriel. Happy to be with you. Great week of fights last week. And as I understand it, I want to say it's about 90% that these fights on the 30th will be in Phoenix.
Yeah, you think that this is the direction it's going in right now, that the Nevada State Athletic Commission is not going to bend. Basically, they're closed, right? Like, they're not issuing licenses. They just basically said, yeah, we're not issuing anything to anybody right now. You know, Dana White trying to put a little pressure on him, saying he'll be very disappointed, you know, essentially after all the money that he sunk into the state. Etc. But you're hearing it's going to be in Arizona. So where would it be? In the arena, an empty arena?
Yeah, it'll be in Phoenix, and it'll be down whatever they used to. They've had a million different names of the
where the Phoenix
thing.
Suns
I don't
play.
Even know what they call it.
It'll be where the Phoenix Suns play.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the interesting thing is about 4 miles straight down the road from me, so it's close, but not that I'm going to be trying to go. I'm interested in the fact that what we'll have now is a fight card the 30th, and then we'll come right back the next week with UFC 250 June 6th, as opposed to being able to have a card this week and then having the week off. So we were going to get a week off. We just get it sooner than we thought. And I think it works better into my handicapping schedule.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it either. We can sort of regroup right now. You mentioned June 6th, the return of Amanda Nunes taking on the Canadian, Felicia Spencer. Nunes is like a minus 550 favorite. So are there fighters from the MMA lab on this card, Lou? On UFC Fight Night 173, whatever the hell it's called. It's hard to keep up. Like, I don't even know anymore. Especially now with the changes, right? Like, they, whatever it is, either their pay-per-views or their fight nights, etc. But are they, because if it is in Phoenix, that'd be an advantage if there were any local fighters on the card.
Well, I think I have to answer it this way. As I'm looking for who's announced for that card, I see no Phoenicians. There's 4 fights. Of course, Mackenzie Dern used to be at the lab. So no lab fighters announced yet. However, every Phoenix card is populated with some lab fighters. And I would think Fight Ready, who incorporated a few of the MMA lab fighters in a recent semi-exodus, might have a few fighters that would participate on that card as well. So it's, I mean, we're a little bit hampered in that we only know a couple of the fights, as well the main event, which is Woodley, Tyron Woodley against Gil Burns, sets up to be a pretty competitive fight.
Didn't they say they'd never have Woodley as a main event ever again? Here he is right now. It's like, yeah, he'll be in the main event. If you look at the card, it's obviously going to be the main event. Yet, I don't know how it worked out that way. Yet, like, you know, like all three fight cards were great, right? I mean, it was tough to top. You figure, oh, how the hell are they going to top that Saturday night when, you know, the first night back? Yet, there, you know, it was a thing of beauty, actually. It was really old school in the sense that I was glad that guys like Nico Price and Luque and Landwehr and these guys, Landwehr and Keller, and, you know, sort of these guys that in a regular situation, Lou, we all take it for granted. And even me, like, I sort of became that snob, right? Like, I'll tune in, you know, for the main event. I'll tune in during the main card. I don't, you know, yeah, whatever there, you know. And I, you know, I didn't take, you know, you didn't have those classic sort of the classic fights, you know, anymore. But somehow it's like they went in a time machine or something and they found the people that were willing to fight in the middle of a pandemic were all crazy. Like, you know what I mean? It was almost like a common theme. Like, for, you know, the Mitchell kid from Arkansas. Ah, it's a hoax to take your guns away. To the Hernandez. I had it, and I beat it, and I don't care. And I would fight with it even if I had it. It was like a common theme. I was like, yeah, you guys really, it was like, if they were casting for a movie, Lou, the casting was brilliant. You know what I mean? They got every psychopath that, like, loves blood and was willing to fight and had no health issue, like, concerns. It just got out there, and you know, it almost does it injustice because there were so many guys that laid their heart on the line, Lou, and girls, you know, during those three fight cards. But there was just so many great fights and so much blood and so much craziness. You're like, oh yeah, yeah, and that fight, and oh yeah, and that fight, and oh yeah, that, you know, that fighter got screwed. Those fighters really laid it out on the line. You know, they really did.
Totally agree, and you know, I think some of the fighters were motivated because they really needed to fight and therefore earn. I think that there was a good, you know, maybe as much as 20% of the fighters I felt, or I handicapped anyway, and I still feel looking back after the three events that a good 20% of them had to fight, needed to fight, needed the income. Most of them did. I can tell you that it was interesting. I didn't find any real trends, you know. I mean,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
when everybody moved up, you know, sometimes it was an advantage.
So annoying,
guys.
Lou.
Sometimes it wasn't.
I wanted to ask you about that. I was going to say that. I was like, well, OSP moved up, and he didn't look good. He looked stiff, and he didn't, you know what I mean? And then, you know, Barbosa moved down and he lost, but he looked awesome, right? It was these weird, you're right, there was, it's hard to, what can we take away from it as far as a trend?
Yeah, and you really mentioned a good point. For instance, this last card, I handicapped Vera as being in a very good spot, and I hit that handicap. I really handicapped that fight correctly. I thought Vera, and there were times when Yadong was against the fence, just casually looking at the clock, he was distracted by his visa issues. I think he got really lucky to win the fight, and I felt like the handicap I made on
we got screwed.
Was correct, even though I lost the fight. Now let's turn to Dan Ige. I handicapped Ige to be enough of a fighter that he was going to be able to dominate a compromised Edson Barboza, except for one thing. Edson Barboza wasn't compromised. I totally missed that handicap. Edson showed me a lot and arguably should have won that fight. And so I would have rather won the one that I earned and handicapped correctly and lose the one that I probably missed. It just didn't work out that way.
Yeah, it's funny. You're right. I can't disagree. there were a couple of decisions, and I tweeted, I admit it. I said I thought the wrong fighter won, but I'll take the win. Yet when it was all said and done, I was on the wrong side. I was on the wrong side of some of these bad decisions, I think, than the right side. Yet there seems to be a theme. I've never seen so many fighters actually after. And yeah, I don't know. They're delusional. I give them credit for fighting, but they all want the results overturned. It's like, you know, they sound like bettors at the casino. Sounds like bettors at the South Point. Oh, yeah, but it wasn't fair. Yeah, but it wasn't fair. It's like, yeah, well, it doesn't matter if it was fair or not. The ticket says you lost, right? It's like one of those type of deals. And, like, Barbosa's really not letting this go. He's like, ah, oh, we need an investigation. The result, they need to do the right thing. They need to overturn this. It's like, bro, it was a close fight. You lost in a cinch. It's not like it was the robbery of the century here, Edson. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't even think it was a robbery. I mean, if you really look at volume against power, especially the fact that Ige had him in on the floor for two takedowns the end of the third round, it's really, how do you judge that second round where Barbosa got a late takedown? Now, most of the time, that's enough to sway judges. In this particular case, it wasn't. Now, when we start to talk about judges, let's just understand one thing. When we're talking about three states, Texas, Florida, and New York, those are the states you cannot allow a fight to go to decision, because you're going to get whacked out completely hideous results based on the incompetence of the old boxing judges that sit in on a sport they got no clue about. Florida, Texas, New York. Remember those three. They're the worst. And what we saw out of Florida was three straight fights, so it looks like it's a bad look for the UFC. It's really a bad look for the Florida Athletic Commission. That's why Dana's so anxious to get the hell out of Florida and get back to Vegas or even Phoenix.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. And you're right about New York. It's crazy. You figure, like, in New York with the big fight history and stuff, there's horrible decisions in New York all the time. It's like, well, you're right. It's just, it's, you expect it. Texas, they're big on like screwing the visitor. You know what I mean? Like, it's, they have the big home field advantage type of deal there. You know, another place actually is Quebec. In Quebec, the UFC doesn't go there as much anymore. Now the GSP doesn't fight. But same thing, Quebec, it was basically like, if it was anywhere near close, they were giving it to the hometown fighter, Lou. It was just the way you expected it, and I used to cash in on it. But at the same point in time, and it is true that people, like, you will have a couple of judges that are assigned by the state. And I'd like to know, like, how it completely really works. Because at the same point in time, like, Sal D'Amato was still there, Lou, right? He's everywhere. He'll be in Montreal. He'll be in Las Vegas. He'll be in Florida. So he sort of gets the sign. He applied. I don't know how, like, he has his license in different states, I guess. Yet it's interesting because you get these, some of them unknowns, and then you get some of the regulars. But I can't, it's a good point you raised, though. I can't recall so many fights where one judge would have it 30-27, one fighter, and 30-27, another judge would have it 30-27, someone else. It happened numerous times.
You did, and that's insanity. What the hell? What are they watching? And I don't buy it.
Yeah, you're right. It could be like one guy says, "Oh, 29-28 Pettis," and the other guy 29-28 Cerrone. You could live with that, but one guy says 30. I'm not even using that fight as an example, but yeah, like your judges. How do you see it so differently? How do you see a fight so differently?
Yeah, it's because they come from a different background. They have different degrees of expertise in mixed martial arts. Usually less, very little. And so the better judges are the ones that have done one or two fights and are used to looking at four limbs instead of two. The issue all comes down to state fight commissions have an umbilical to boxing, and it's polluting our sport. And that's no easy fix.
Lou, laying it down on the Squared Circle crew. So I guess you don't want to talk about Mike Tyson coming back?
Yeah, I mean, Tyson and Holyfield would be great. Watch those old geezers get back in there. I can tell you, both of them retired for a reason. I would tell you, Tyson's got a round and a half before he runs out of juice the way he was going. And you know, it would be fun and everything, but I'm more thrilled, intrigued, and fascinated by Jones and Ngannou.
Yeah, we'll get to that. And it seems like it could potentially happen, actually. A lot of times this stuff is just sort of talk. John Jones has thrown it out there before about fighting at heavyweight and has never really backed it up. But John Jones has also left so much money on the table in his career over the years. And I think even he knows that he doesn't, you know what I mean? He doesn't have like forever here to make money. So
I also believe that Jones hasn't had butterflies, hasn't been nervous, hasn't actually believed he could lose a fight since he's fought Cormier. And make no mistake about it, Daniel Cormier pushed John Jones around mentally. That's why Jones had to resort to using extracurricular in the first fight, not the second. All that said, I think Jones needs his wits scared out of him in order to perform peak performance. He knows it. And I think Ngannou is the guy that can scare the wits out of damn near anyone.
Ngannou right now, original numbers that are put out there, Ngannou minus 160 against John Jones. John Jones, an underdog at plus 130. It's a great point that you raise as far as wanting to test himself. Yet I think it's more monetarily, actually. I totally get it, and I understand it, and I think that you're onto something in a way that it does test him. And I do agree that, like, I think he's probably bored, right? That he has been bored. He doesn't get up for the fights. It's the same guys. He's beaten dudes multiple times.
Ain't motivating him.
Exactly. Like, you know what I mean? He's run the table. He's run the gauntlet. But if one of those guys that was at 205 right now actually had a name and he could make money and do it, he would do it, I think. I don't think he'd be doing this. I think he sees, what am I going to make for making one Blackwoods? I'm going to, even if I beat him, no matter what happens, people will rip me after the fact and say, oh, I'm scared. And, you know, one of his tweets, Lou, he basically stated, I'm looking for a big payday right about now. I think it's monetary. Like, dude, this guy has left like 20, $30 million on the table, Lou, over the years. Like, of all the times, like, he hasn't fought and he could have fought and he didn't fight and he was suspended. And how much has he spent on legal fees? You know, it's just he has left a lot of money on the table over the years, Lou.
Yes, he has. And I will know how he regards this fight, whether it's a money fight or whether it's a reputation and money fight. And hear me out. It by whether he takes a warm-up. John Jones and Anthony Johnson. John Jones and Henrique. John Jones and Rodrigo de Lima.
Give him Jairzinho.
Some tin can that he can get into and take a tune-up fight on. If John Jones tunes up and then goes to Ngannou, that's a different handicap than if John Jones goes straight to Ngannou.
It's a great point. It's a great thought right there. Whether it's just, all right, give me the money, let's just do this right now, and I don't really care about the result. I found it interesting that he sort of took that angle, too. That he said, you all want to see me lose? Well, here's your chance, right? Like, he said, you want to see me lose? And it's a good point he raised, because he even said, he goes, I could lose this fight, right? Like, he wasn't saying, oh, I'm going to win for sure. He goes, you guys want to see me lose? Pay for it. You know, that's basically the gist of it on Twitter. He said, you want to see me fight? I'll do it. You want to see me lose? Hey, maybe I'll lose, but you got to pay to make it happen. Get on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you. because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're at the Unfiltered, the podcast continues. We're kicking it with Lou, Gamblu.com. So, Lou, it's been a while since we've had sort of a UFC mega fight, huh? Like, Khabib and Conor. Khabib and Conor was big time. I would say that was the last sort of like, just transcends everything, so to speak. John Jones and Ngannou would be that fight. It would be one of the, and they don't have the same star power anymore, right? The UFC in a way. They rely on, a few people. That's what I liked about those cards. That was sort of my point earlier, that it was about the fighting. It wasn't about the stars. It wasn't about the smack talk. It was about, let's just go old school. And something actually we should take away from this, actually, Lou, we said earlier about there weren't trends. One thing that I picked up, dude, is the fighters, the sort of younger, hungrier fighters, Lou, that have come up and have fought in weird situations before. You know what I mean? I heard a lot of fighters and a few dudes that had good performances. They said, well, what was it like after? And he's like, man, that was nothing. He's like, I'm used to fighting with no fans. Or I used to fight on Tuesday nights all the time. You know what I mean?
And yeah, or in a garage.
Exactly, in a barn. Oh, yeah, no, the regional league I was in, man, there was no fans and there was no this and there was no practice. Like, you know what I mean? They all sort of had that. Remember what I said? They're all sort of badasses, Lou. You know what I mean? Like, in a way, like, your buddy was just training and, chasing, like, rabbits in Arkansas. Shows up and, like, is a psychopath in the cage. They really found, like, just sort of the hardcore fighter guys. Like, if you're a high-performance computer analytics type of fighter, this pandemic's not for you, Lou.
Those are the guys that are going to say no, and they really did a great job of – they did a great job of matchmaking. Obviously, the fighters were in tune with the organization. The squeaky wheels possibly got fights. And I think that's what we'll see here in the next few cards. Now, especially, they're coming out of the woodwork. They want to get to work just like the rest of us.
Well, so we have Tyron Woodley. And Woodley's often criticized here, Lou. Woodley's often criticized. He's been criticized, actually, by Dana White as sort of a guy that wouldn't do something like this, right? Woodley's reputation amongst fight fans, and partially it's because a lot of UFC fans' opinion is sort of what Dana's narrative is, and Dana doesn't like Woodley. Woodley's turned down fights. Woodley's complained about money. Woodley, to Dana, Woodley's not the guy that'll fight anybody anywhere at any time, right? And Dana, say what you will, about the UFC, but it's built on that. That's what it was built on. The forefathers of the UFC used to fight anybody, even if the guy weighed 300 more pounds than him, right? Like, that was the deal. So props to here Woodley for actually stepping up right now, because the UFC is getting tired of him turning fights down.
Yeah, I've really not been the biggest Woodley proponent over the last few months. However, we got to take each situation by itself. And so just on the scratching the surface, really, you look at a guy like Gil Burns, and who could enter a fight with more momentum than Gil Burns currently? He's really he's kind of riding a little bit of a momentum with it, especially his last fight. Impressive KO is what everybody sees over an aged Damian Maia. Now, all of that said, you look at Woodley, and he's been in the studio, trying to make records. And so his stock's probably as low as you can go. But Woodley's 36, but he's not that much older than Burns 3 years. He's going to have a 3-inch reach advantage with his arms. He's going to have a 3-inch reach advantage with his legs. He's a good, solid wrestler that always gives brilliant jiu-jitsu experts trouble. And I think, quite honestly, that if we were to look at this fight a year ago, before Woodley was in all this hot water with Dana and trying to make rap videos, that he'd be a 220 or a 230 in this fight. I think at minus 160, which is the number I'm seeing right now, I would say it's probably time to take a little look at Woodley right now, because I think next week this thing's a buck 80, a buck 85.
Gil Burns has won 5 fights in a row. As you mentioned, he destroyed Damian Maia in that the fanless Brazilian card, actually. Wasn't that long ago, actually, that card. Was that the fanless Brazilian card? It was, wasn't it? Yeah, it was Lee and Oliveira, Damian Maia. There was no fans, right?
Yeah, so that was what, February? Early March?
Yeah, March 14th.
There we go.
Quick turnaround. Quick turnaround. Well, you know what? He had a 2-minute and 34-second fight, so I guess he can have a quick turnaround. So he beat Damian Maia. He beat Gunnar Nelson, who's got a good ground game, the submission game, etc. This is definitely so. To me, I get, a big key to this fight, Lou, is what's Gil Burns' takedown defense like? I see he beat Olivier Aubin-Mercier, but that's not, Aubin-Mercier is a grinder, and they call him a wrestler and stuff, but it's not the same level as a Missouri Tiger and Tyron Woodley brings to the table. To me, that's going to be a big key, right? Because that's the dangerous thing about Woodley. I like him as a fighter, but I don't get the feeling he likes fighting. And, it's for money, but he doesn't make enough money, so it pisses him off. And as you stated, it's sort of a case-by-case issue, but I wonder about him sometimes. But he's such a great athlete. And with Woodley, Lou, he's pretty dynamic, right? His stand-up is good. He does have power, and he can sort of wrestle anytime he wants. He is a damn good wrestler. So, what can Gilbert Burns stop the wrestling? That's my question.
Yeah, and the other thing is let's not forget, Burns first entered the organization at 55 or trying to fight down. I think he's telling us something by that. Now, he's had success once he moved up, but against limited talented guys, Kunchenko, Damian Maia, 40 years old.
Yeah.
He's totally a one-style fighter, as is Gunnar Nelson.
Nelson, one-dimensional.
Woodley's got some explosion and some power. I think he's getting a little underestimated here of a double whammy when it comes to recency. Low tarnish, high tarnish on Woodley and a lot of love for Burns. And it'll be interesting to see how this thing goes. I'm vexed as to whether to move now because I don't want the number to go higher on Woodley. That said, I could see some people betting Burns, and maybe Woodley goes down next week. I'm not sure. At the end of the day, I'm going to take a little bit on Woodley at minus 160 and save myself either if it goes up in a week, I got a better position, and if it goes down, I'll take another unit and melt my unit average cost down a little bit.
Lou, gamblew.com, kicking it with us. I wish it was this Saturday right now. I'm fired
you
up.
You and me both.
Yeah, well, I'm fired up right now. And it really was amazing how each card, as I stated, people are like, oh, no way you're going to be able to top what we saw. What we saw on the last few nights ago. And then they would manage to do it. But what was amazing to me, if you add it all up, Lou, the 3 main events, the underdog won all 3 times. Justin Gaethje cashed. Glover Teixeira cashed, and subsequently, finally, Alistair Overeem cashed.
I had two of the three.
Man, three underdogs cashing the main events, Lou.
Yeah, that's amazing. I had 2 of the 3. I didn't bet the Glover fight. Had I bet the Glover fight, I probably would have looked at Smith some way, shape, or form. But clearly, he wasn't he wasn't prepared mentally. The stuff with his home and everything else, I think, was weighing on him. And I got to tell you, I think it was the same with Harris as well. I think he carried a lot more into the octagon than a fight against Alistair Overeem. And I come away with an unbelievable respect for Walt Harris, but he's got to get to the gym. He needs a few more fights to kind of round out his abilities, and he has plenty of abilities.
Yeah, he does, but he's not young either, right? He's not a young man, Walt Harris. And it's crazy. It's crazy when you watch the sport for as long as we have and to see like the fighters transition to what they were and then what they turn out to be after. And I remember like Overeem was like the last place that he wanted to be was on the ground ever before years ago. You know what I'm saying? Like that was what people would do to him. It was like, all right, if you take Overeem down, he doesn't like it. Don't let him stand up and punch you in, you know. And I don't know if it was Verdum once fighting Overeem. I don't even know if it was in a UFC. Like, I think it probably was. But it was, like, years ago. And, like, Verdum was, like, on his back telling him, come down here only. And it was funny. Yeah. It was one of those old school. I hate when fighters. Remember in the old days they do that? They'd be like, come down here. They would lie on their back. And Overeem was, like, kicking him and stuff. He was like, I'm not going down there. And, you know, it's amazing to me, though. So years later, you know, stuff passes. And time passes, and there's Overeem, eats a couple of heavy shots from a big man, Walt Harris. And Overeem's like, you know what? This guy can't wrestle at all. I'm going to take him down. And Overeem looked like, he looked like Mark Coleman as a wrestler compared to Walt Harris.
No doubt about it. The other thing that I have to comment there, since we're on that particular juncture of that fight, what a sensational job. I mean, we just watched Peterson stop the Cruz-Cejudo fight, I think appropriately, but many think early. Okay. And then we go to the next fight, which was Smith and Teixeira, and everybody believes Herzog waited too long to stop that one. Dan Mergliotta did a masterful job in that first round of not stopping the fight and letting Overeem get to his senses and work his way out of it. Lesser refs would have stopped that fight.
Yeah, people that bet on Harris were not happy about it. Actually, they were saying, come on, man. Okay, they didn't stop the fight. You know what, though, Mergliotta, you're right. I'm not going to dispute it. And it's funny because I actually had Walt Harris, okay? And people were tweeting me, and I was doing a podcast, and they were like, well, they should have stopped the fight. And I said, no, Overeem deserves the benefit of the doubt. And clearly, as you saw Overeem destroy him after that, you know, that Overeem did deserve the benefit of the doubt. Where I thought Mergliotta screwed up, though, he let Overeem get through it. But Walt Harris was not coming back after, right? Like, you know, Harris was done. He was physically gassed. He was lying face first. He had, like, you know, he was just protecting his head. He wasn't punching back. And he ate too many shots more than he had to. Really, I thought Mergliotta should have stepped in then. Yet, the fact of the matter is, it's the fight game. And, you know, Mergliotta doesn't work for the UFC, but it's not really the referee's job to stop, right? To stop,
but,
like...
No, but he was yelling. I mean, you could hear him yelling at Walt. Walt, I need you to do something. I need you to do something. I need you to do something.
And he wasn't, so stop it then.
Yeah, no, he finally did. But, I thought... I come away thinking, man, if we had judging in the UFC like we have refereeing, half of our decision issues would be gone. I really think those guys do a pretty good job.
I can't believe I'm forgetting the guy's name, man. He saved my ass for like one of my biggest MMA bets ever. I think it was my biggest bet. Literally, I had like seven dimes.
Herb Dean?
No, that wasn't Dean. It was the guy that went to jail for growing the weed.
Not Rothwell, Bernstein or a Jewish kid.
Josh Bernstein. Exactly. He was the ref for the Shane Carwin Brock Lesnar fight.
Oh, I remember that fight.
And Carwin was murdering him, remember? He was murdering Brock Lesnar. It was like, oh my God, any one of these punches, they could stop it. They might stop it. Oh no. And somehow they don't stop it. And the second round starts, Lesnar just takes him down. It was like, all right, thanks for coming.
Josh Rosenthal.
Rosenthal, thank you. Rosenthal. Yeah, Rosenthal saved my ass that night, Lou.
Well, it didn't. I mean, it didn't matter because after that first round, Carwin was gassed, and he wasn't going anywhere because it's just like Walt. I mean, after he got so excited, he just blew it out, and that was it.
Walt looked so good in the beginning of the fight too. Right, like you're right. He caught.
God, he's a big man though. God, is he huge?
Yeah, and he cracked Overeem. Overeem's mouth split open right away, and I was like, oh boy, the damage right away. Here we go. And he clipped Overeem a couple of times. Hey, we got to give credit to the Reem, though. I mean, Reem's chin's been questioned before in the past. The guy's been knocked out. Like, his last seven losses are actually all via KO. So when Reem loses, he gets knocked out. But give him credit for fighting through that. And not easy fighting a guy that just lost his daughter and that story that you've got to go in there and beat a bad guy and beat this guy.
I think it pissed Overeem off and provided focus for him. And I also like the fact that he's training with Curtis Blaydes at Elevation in Denver. I mean, Reem's doing what he's got to do to stay relevant. And you better be on your P's and Q's if you're going to get in there with him.
Yeah, Reem's like a football team that's going to show up, Lou. Right? Like, yeah, they might not win, but you're going to get punched and you could lose. Like, that's... He is a guy that can beat anybody on any given night. It's amazing, actually, if you look at, you look at his career and how long he's been around and the crazy fights that he's been in over the years. I know the UFC was disappointed when he first got there, right? They really hyped him up. They were like, all right, Reem's here. The heavyweight division needed some flash. And there was so much promise when he beat Lesnar. And then, there'd be the bad Reem. He'd get knocked out, he'd make bad decisions in the octagon. And I know it pissed them off because they pay him a lot of money. Like, Overeem's contract is big, Lou. He makes like 240, 250, like, and he's not even a champ, right? Like, he's guaranteed big money for each fight. When he signed, they needed heavyweights, and he was making a shitload of money over there. So he was like, I don't need this, so you better pay me a lot of money. And they do. But he's actually proved his worth. He's been pretty durable. If you look, he's lasted all the heavyweights in of his generation are almost gone. And here he is still on TV, right, providing entertainment for them. Get on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Unfiltered, the podcast continues. Let's do this thing. We're kicking it with Lou. We got one last segment with Lou. And then we got a card next Saturday. We were talking earlier about fighters protesting losses. Angela Hill protests her loss as well. And, I wish as gamblers we could protest our losses. But the fighters are finding out what gamblers know. Final decision is a final decision. Sort of like baseball, Lou. Like, somebody could, take a baseball bat, break the pitcher's arm, and the other team, like the team loses the game and the other team would appeal with the league, they wouldn't overturn it. You know what I mean? They never overturn anything. It's like, yeah, we know we're wrong, but we're not going to overturn it. And I've been pissed off about this in the past, actually. There was, I think it was UFC 100, actually. It was a great night. UFC 100, we crushed it, Lou. And I literally played an 11-fight parlay. Talk about a parlay playing puke. But I was hammering all the bets. I basically was playing. I'm not a big parlay guy, actually. But I was playing all the bets individually. And, you know, we had a bunch of people there. It was like a get-together, a lot of fans. And it was, you know, it was the first MMA Expo and all that. And somebody told me, they said, I took all of your picks and I put it in a parlay. And I said, oh, really? I said, well, now I'm going to have to do it because I don't want to miss out on this big parlay. And, man, we went 10-1, Lou.
Oh.
We went 10-1. Now, listen, I crushed it. And I made money and stuff. But the one loss was that Karkazian guy. Karkazian, what was his freaking name? And it's been around so long. I'm dropping all these names suddenly. Anyways, it got overruled.
I'm trying to think. Wasn't that Bisping and Dan Hendo in that?
Yes. Yeah, Karo Parzizian. That's it. That was the guy's name. Dude, like, I had him, but he lost. But the other guy failed a drug test, like, on the spot, like that night type thing. Like, they overturned it, like, later that night.
Unbelievable.
So they overturned it. And he actually, it became whatever. And, but there's no overturning
it. Did the sports books honor it?
No.
I didn't think so. They honored the original call and that was it.
That's it then. You know, you've been around a long time. That's the decision. Once Buffer announces it, Lou, that's the decision, bro.
Yeah.
With the sports book, at least. Like the state right. can overturn it. They can do whatever the hell they want to do, the state. They could make a contest. They could give a win to someone else. They could do whatever the hell they wanted to. But, yeah, the sports book, the fine print says, whatever is announced in the ring, same in boxing, whatever's announced in the ring. Because I remember, like, the Pacquiao-Bradley stuff, pretty much the biggest robbery ever. And there was talk that, oh, they're going to overturn it. And I think they even, like, one of the commissions did. Didn't matter with the books, Lou. You tear your ticket up. It is what it is. Cold world.
it is, and it just brings up a good point. You better know what the fine print rules are where you're betting, because if you don't, chances are, just like me many times, you'll find out the hard way.
Oh, me and Cam got screwed in that skins game the other day, bro. It was brutal.
Oh, yeah. How bad was that? I mean, everybody's whining about that.
Man, I still don't understand. So they play 18 holes. They play 18 holes. And
then flip a coin.
Dude, yeah, but it wasn't tied. Like, yeah, my deal is it's like going to overtime in a hockey game when one team's winning 3-1. You know what I mean? It's like, why are we going to overtime? Like, I don't understand. Like I thought, all right, you play the 19th hole for charity. Closest to the pin, $5 million, whatever. Ha, ha, ha. Good. Like, it was 7-5 after 18 holes. Lou, I had them at plus 155. And I thought I won. Right, I'm watching it, and I'm like, all right, it's the 18th hole. It's 7-5. We just won. And then they're like, oh, now we're going to go to there's a special closest to the pin for 6 skins. It's like, yeah, like you stated. That's what happens when you bet on this crap, though. It's like betting on Bellator, Lou. Bad things happen.
That's why I don't. I've been really good. I'll tell you, the first week of this thing, I started to dip my toe in horse racing a little bit, and I lost a few $100 to my guy, and I said, I guarantee you, if somebody says that they saw me bet a horse race, you'll know they're lying, because I'm done. I mean, I bet 4 or 5 horse races in a week, and all 5 of them horses are still running. So that was it for me. And now to forget the ping pong or the Korean soccer, I'll just wait for fights. And consequently, I had 3 really good cards. So knock on wood, let's hope I can carry the momentum forward.
Well, you did a great job. So there was some great insight in the 3 cards in 7 days. And I'm kicking myself for not riding the underdogs. And it's funny because I do like betting the underdogs in these main events. You know, I'm of the belief that a lot of these fights are kind of toss-ups to begin with. So if you're getting value, right, you're getting value. Yet the odds makers and, you know, the matchmakers, they did a good job in which they scared you off. It was like, well, Anthony Smith shouldn't be minus 184, but he's probably going to win the fight. Right? And, you know, it was the same thing. I'll tell you, though, the money started to steam in on Overeem because Walt Harris closed at 140 or so. Right? So people were starting to bet on Overeem. And it's funny because people were talking about, damn, man, the underdog cash. And I know it's no way to bet a main event, Lou, just blindly like that. But in the sports betting world, from just not fight fans even, there was a big, well, the underdog's already cashed the first two. Yeah, how do you not take the underdog again?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't get impeded with all of what they did the last cards. I mean, clearly. No,
that's why I took Harris. That was my mistake.
Yeah, I think you just got to look at the body of work. Harris doesn't belong in there with Overeem just yet. But to me, and my theme was for all three cards, be patient, wait till game day. What happened game day? Well, I was a smart guy and released Gaethje 165 10 days early. Well, Ferguson closed minus 210 or minus 220. So if you'd have just been patient and gone against the flow of all the money in the Ferguson fight, you'd have been on Gaethje. You'd have been fading Cruz because all the money came in on Cruz. Then if you go to the next fight card, everybody, their mama was on Anthony Smith. All you had to do was look at all the flow of money coming in on Anthony Smith fight day and go to Teixeira. Alex Hernandez getting tons of money against Dober. Dober knocks him out. And then finally, we go to the final card. Overeem caught money early, some sharp money, but the public was all over Harris. All the sports books in Vegas needed Harris because everybody had tied their parlays into him coming back. So I really think that my theory of waiting and being patient and letting a lot of these new bettors decide where I was going to go by fading him was a pretty good plan for me.
Lou, gamblu.com with us. We got a couple of minutes left with Lou. And I brought up earlier, Alistair Overeem makes a lot of money. And it's one thing that the UFC does not like doing is paying their fighters a lot of money. Especially like, and Overeem's not a star. He's a big name. But when I said earlier, that they used to, and I know for a fact, like, I know people that know Overeem and stuff, and it bothered the UFC. They were like, man, this guy makes like $250K a fight. He gets knocked out all the time. And that was earlier. They were disappointed they couldn't use him, as, you know, in main events as much as they wanted to. Yet he's really, you know, he's justified his money by stepping up in like these sort of TV cards and these events. And he is a named fighter, but I see the, I see his payday here. 400,000. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, and you know
what?
So they
got 200 and 200. 200 a show, 200 a win.
I'm tickled for the guy because there's at least one person that was able to use leverage to his benefit. And he probably knows how important it is for him not only to stay in the game, but to stay sharp, to be able to continue to make those kinds of payments.
Yeah. It's another exactly.
You know what I thought was really interesting? Him and Olenek are the only two fighters in UFC history to have won fights in four different decades. So they won a fight in 99, in the 2000s, the 2010s, and now in 2020. That's
wow.
Pretty spectacular.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Yeah, Overeem's bank account's probably pretty spectacular, too. Right after all these, you know, where Overeem had the advantage when he came to the UFC, that he was already rich, Lou. You know what I mean? He was already getting that type of money. So he was like, why would I sign? Like, you want me, then, you know, you got to guarantee me this money because I'm already making this money in Japan. I'm already making this money. And he liked living in Holland. Like, he wasn't, oh, I need to go to America type thing. You know, he was already a legend over there. So, yeah, 400K for him. Walt Harris got 75,000. That's weak, 75K for a main event, considering how they use your story as much as they did, too. Claudia Gadella, $108,000. Angela Hill got 54. Dan Ige got 100K. Barbosa walked away with 79K. Christoph Jocko, nice payday. That was one of my top bets of the night, actually, Jocko. He made $108,000. Eric Anders got $61,000. So Elkins, if you're wondering about Elkins and Elkins' face, he got $62,000 to get beat up by Nate Landwehr, who walked away with $26,000. Courtney Casey, Lou, $100,000 for Courtney Casey.
Well, that's a great payday. I'm happy to see that happen for her. Obviously, I was on the other girl, but I mean, even $100,000. I mean, you just, let's take Landwehr makes $26,000. Okay, he's got to pay for him and his camp to get to the to get to Florida. And by the time he gives his manager or his trainer the 20% he's got coming, and you take away the expenses for flight and hotel, that ain't a lot of money for a kid like Landwehr. And even a girl like Courtney Casey probably, what, clears 65 gross after all of that and then gets taxed, and it takes home 32, 35 grand. I mean, yeah, these kids work awful hard for their money.
Oh, yeah, they do. And there's a dark side to that, actually. You're right that, not to mention, a lot of these fighters borrow money during the camp. Right? Like the gym might spot them the money and say, all right, listen, we'll give you $20,000 now, but we're going to take it out of your pay after when you get, you know, and you got to pay training partners. It's another thing, right? And it's not like, oh, yeah, everyone's just coming for free. And, you know, well, this guy's going to fly in and train and roll with you, jiu-jitsu, to train with you just because you want him to. It doesn't work that way. And you're right. Like, the money comes out of their pocket. I know the system pretty well. I got to believe, Lou, you would hope now that they took care of all travel, number one. Like, and I'm talking about all travel. Like, generally as it is now, they'll pay for two tickets only. So basically, yeah, they'll pay for the fighter's ticket and a fighter's guest, but the fighter has to pay for his corner to go and stuff like that. The UFC in this pandemic better have paid for everybody.
Yeah, no, I'm going to tell you that they didn't. I'm going to tell you none of that changed. That's my feeling on it, and I hope I'm wrong. But if I was wrong, it would be headlines. They'd be broadcasting that.
Oh, that's a good point. We took care of them. We did this. Yeah, it's a good. That's how I always know whether the ratings are good or not, Lou. Whether they boast. That's how you can tell, like, because they don't. They're a private company, right? They don't have to disclose their pay-per-views. So if it goes real well, Dana will be like official numbers. If it doesn't go well, Dana will be on Twitter. Dave Metzger's an asshole. Doesn't know what he's talking about. Doesn't know anything about pay-per-views. What does he know? You know, what does he know? $700,000 pay-per-views though, was a damn good number that the UFC, very positive week for the UFC. And I think, you know, as far as the fighters that came out of this the most, there was a good article on MMA Junkie. Which fighter came out of this in the best situation? And you have to say Justin Gaethje. It's just because now, as Justin Gaethje stated when Conor was chirping, that Conor, you don't control anything right now. And even though he does, because he's Conor McGregor and Dana White will let him control things. But at the same point in time, Gaethje's like, I want to fight Khabib. It's not like I'm in there, you know what I mean? You can wait your turn type of stuff. So Gaethje, I think Gaethje's life is the one that changed the most.
I would agree with that, and I'm happy for the kid. He showed me that he's coachable. We didn't see the reckless craze duke it out in the center, Justin Gaethje. We found a measured guy that fought with IQ, and I would propose to you that if he can do that against Ferguson, he can do that against Khabib, and I think that's a much more competitive fight than people may realize.
And sad news, we've got about 2 minutes here, but sad news as far as Khabib's father is concerned, coronavirus, COVID-related, he's been in and out of a coma from what I understand. I knew last week it wasn't good. And I thought it got a little bit better, but it seems like the latest news is that it's not good, and it's probably not going to end very well either. And you know, Khabib's real close with his father, too.
Yeah, I lost my pops about 5 years ago. I had 57 years with him. A father is such a great thing. All I can do is say prayers for old man Nurmagomedov, and I hope the whole family can get through this as best as they possibly can.
Yeah. And, yeah, and it's Connor. Listen, Connor's been good in this pandemic, right? I think it's helped him. He hasn't been getting wasted. He's been working out. He's in good shape. And I don't have a problem with him trying to get, you know, get back into the game, so to speak, by running his mouth. It's the fight game, right? These guys, fighters are going to say things, but the narrative about Khabib running to Russia because he's scared and stuff. I mean, really, guys? I mean, really, Connor, that's the angle you're taking? And Twitter just lit up Connor saying, you know, and I couldn't even resist saying, you know, you lost the fight, right? Like, I don't think like he's in Russia right now because he was scared. Just like the, you know, like I said, as soon as I gave Connor a little bit credit for being a good guy during the pandemic, he had to go down like the route and then started calling people terrorists and like, you know, they're just they're the same old crap. You know, the act gets old a little bit, but the act never gets old having you on the show, Luke. Great stuff. We'll give you a little bit of a break to prepare for the fight night. You can count your money. Stay away from the horses.
Count on it.
Luke, always a pleasure, Luke. Thanks for the time, sir.
Thanks, Gabriel. Have a great week. I'll see you next week.
Luke!
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.